Hello out there, and welcome to your next mission video podcast. Today we're going to discuss something that you don't hear much about, veterans in the criminal justice system. Did you know that an estimated 200,000 veterans are incarcerated in local, state, and federal facilities? We're going to examine with the director of the Veterans Justice Commission the reason so many veterans are incarcerated and what we're doing as a nation to be sure they are taken care of. You won't want to miss this one. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Video Podcast, where we tell the stories of those who have served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition to financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there, warriors past and present, your families, and thank you for your service to our great country. Before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, and Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback with additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision, and USAA. Together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I'm going to say it every week. We love them too. We're going to be discussing an important topic today, veterans who end up in the criminal justice system. And I'm so excited to introduce United States Army Colonel Jim D. Seward, Director of the Veterans Justice Commission, which is part of the Council of Criminal Justice. Hope I got that right. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor for me to have another Army guy on the show with me. That's for doggone sure. Hey, we had a lot to talk about today, but before we do that, could you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. I started out as an enlisted M1 tanker a long time ago in the 80s on the East-West German border. After law school, or after my first 4 years in the Army, I went to undergrad and law school, and I've been an advisor to governors and generals ever since. And again, it's great to be with you today.
I got to ask, was you a driver on the tank or a loader, or what was your position on that vehicle?
Of course, I got to start out as a loader. I eventually, when I became sergeant, I became a gunner and got to do the real fun work.
Did you ever qualify with the tank? You ever go down
shoot? Oh, yes. And I have the hearing to prove it.
I've got the same thing. Sir, would you explain for our viewers and listeners, you know, what the Council of Criminal Justice System is and how Veterans Justice Commission, how does it really fit in? You know?
Yes. Sergeant Major, the Council on Criminal Justice is a nonprofit and nonpartisan think tank that focuses on criminal justice issues in the United States. The Veterans Justice Commission was founded through that think tank. Secretary Chuck Hagel, former Secretary of Defense and U.S. Senator, is the chair of that. Secretary Leon Panetta, as well as 13 other amazing military and criminal justice leaders from America, are on the commission, and they're studying the nature and extent of veterans involved in the justice system and offering evidence-based policy recommendations to try to improve the health, safety, and justice of our veterans and their families and communities.
Yeah, on that commission, do you have any enlisted members on the commission?
We do have enlisted members, and we also have enlisted members that have served significant time in prison. And we have former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Alfred McMichael.
Yeah. That's pretty, I'm glad, you know, because about 86% of the force, I always say 82 to 86% of the forces is enlisted. So it's important to have those the guys in the commission. You know, sir, when we first started out, I mentioned earlier that it estimated, you know, I think it was 200,000 veterans are incarcerated in local, state, and federal facilities. How does that number really correspond to the number of the civilians in the criminal justice system?
Sadly, Sergeant Major, we don't really know. We don't have good data in the U.S. criminal justice system on the number of veterans who are incarcerated.
Yeah. You know, when we had the prep call, you told me that that a lot of people that are incarcerated in a lot of cases are a little bit older. Officers or non-commissioned officers, I don't even know what the mix is. Is that the, could you give me an idea about the age and what ranks these people are that are incarcerated?
We don't have good data on the ranks, Sergeant Major, but we do know that they tend to be older. Veterans tend to commit crimes when they're older, and the average age in the last survey was about 55. Of course, the Vietnam veteran population has been the largest cohort in the prison system. They're starting to age out, and one of the reasons that the Veterans Justice Commission wanted to take this global look at our system is to try to figure out if there were ways we could prevent the post 9/11 veteran from replacing the Vietnam veterans in prison. It's not a new phenomenon. After World War II, there were studies that showed 1/3 of the prison population was made up of veterans.
Wow. Do you have a reason why? I mean, what's the reason why they just don't fit back into society when they get out of the military? Because I got to tell you, well, I won't tell you the whole story, but I sort of struggled myself a little bit when I got out of the service, and I could see where there'd be a problem about people just sort of fitting back into the tribe or community. I mean, maybe you find that out when you're talking to them.
Sergeant Major, we know that there are millions and millions of veterans that go do amazing things after they transition from the military. They run businesses and universities and get elected to Congress, but there's a percentage that really struggle with transition. And in that transition, if they're not able to turn off the switch from being a warfighter, some of them struggle. As you know, we have the world's most lethal killing machine. We train our troops better than anyone in the world. And when they're done, we ask them to flip that switch off. And some of them struggle with PTSD and traumatic brain injury. So, and then they oftentimes abuse substances to cope with those maladies. It's not a huge percentage. But we certainly have a percentage somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-30% of our veterans who really struggle with transition.
Yeah, male and female. Sure, I'm sure there's a lot of females that are in there too. Also,
yes, and sadly, again, we don't have good data on that. States that track their veterans in prison. We met with one recently. They had amazing data on their male veterans. They didn't have any idea how many female veterans they had. That's one of the things the Council on Criminal Justice is doing, because if we can't identify the problem, it's hard to address.
Yeah, yeah. Sir, isn't it true since 9/11, there are more at risk to be involved in the criminal justice system than the generation before? And then I guess the question is why?
Well, Sergeant Major, you and I both know that these two of the nation's longest wars in history deployed troops over and over and over again. We had folks that were rotating in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan. We know from the research that the more deployments that these volunteer service members had, the more likely they are to develop post-traumatic stress. Post-traumatic stress is shown in the research to be associated with criminal justice behavior. I'm sure you're familiar with some of the symptoms of post-traumatic stress, but if an individual is struggling with that and is abusing substances to cope with that, you can see how that might impact them. And this cohort, the post 9/11 cohort, is younger, it's more racially diverse, it's more gender diverse. And we've seen risk in those categories.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about post-traumatic stress, I don't know if I told you on the conference call, or the prep call we had here, I've had PTS for 50 plus years, probably 55 or 56 years. And I really had a struggle when I first got out of the service, or when I first come back out of Vietnam, of just sort of fitting in and sort of talking to people and communicating, because most people I talked to didn't really understand the way I felt. And it was hard for me to explain it. And I'm not sure I even tried to explain it to them too much. Do you actually go to the prisons and sit down and talk to the veterans, or does the commission do that?
We've interviewed stakeholders around the country, from folks that have served to the 60,000 or so nonprofits and public organizations that are working with our veterans across the country. The commission is really looking at three sectors: the front end of the criminal justice system, when people first have contact with police, and we've interviewed folks that have spent time in jail and been involved in that, as well as the stakeholders, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, the veterans, the police. Then they're studying the back end of the criminal justice system, corrections and reentry, and we're repeating that work there. And then a friend of yours, General Peter Corelli, who's my senior advisor on this, really stressed that we needed to look at transition from the military. So the commission is really looking at three massive systems: the Department of Defense, the Veterans Administration, and the U.S. criminal justice system, which is made up of 18,000 plus police departments, 3,600 prosecutors, 19,500 communities in our country.
Wow. As I've listened to all the stuff that you're talking about, do you have any kind of success stories? I mean, I was going to tell you a minute ago, when I was a young kid, I was a juvenile, got in a little bit of trouble there, and probably wasn't the best person in the world, but the Army really changed me and sort of got me in the right direction. Any success stories that you have when you go to these prisons and talk to people that you say, hey, look, I started out this way and this is the reason why? I know it's drugs affiliated and some of this other stuff, but any positive feedback when you go?
There are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of amazing success stories.
Yeah.
Ron Self spent 23 years in San Quentin after being a combat Marine for 8 or 10 years. While Ron Self was involved, or while he was at San Quentin, he got a PhD and developed a curriculum for the post-traumatic stress prisoner. He built a nonprofit. He did a TEDx talk. He's now running a nonprofit with the state of California to try to help veterans transition from prison. There are many other success stories. Hector Matacastillo, who we'll be seeing a video on shortly. Hector's an amazing success story, Sergeant Major, and there are many others.
Yeah. So far we talked about statistics, and so we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to show the audience the video that we were just talking about, this face of some of these numbers. So don't go anywhere, sir. We'll be right back. Thank you. This is Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And if you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are, because we're talking about taking care of our veteran community. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Click on the bell next to receive notifications about all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after this word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. And Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
We're talking with Colonel Jim D. Seward, Director of Veterans Justice Commission. Sir, I promised a video that would put a face on what we're talking about, and here's one soldier's story in his own words.
I'm an 18-year veteran of the United States Army. I received the Bronze Star during Operation Iraqi Freedom. One of the most difficult things I've ever had to do is transition to civilian life. When I was raised, PTSD was a four-letter cuss word. We don't deal with it well. I ended up with my two revolvers in my hands, facing off with eight police officers. In my mind, I was on an operation. I thought I was gonna die. Then I thought, but why would I wanna live? The judge heard about my military history, looked at me and said, young man, you must exorcise your demons. And I'm letting you go to go and get the help that you need. And it worked. I was recruited to become a crisis negotiator. I'm gonna be a clinical psychologist. I've raised five boys. If it wasn't for that second chance, I wouldn't have those boys. Maybe we could do something better with veterans that will become a national model. If we do this right with this population, we could do this right with everyone.
Sir, what do you feel is the most important part of Hector's story?
Hector had a judge that listened to his military history, and that really made a difference. After 12 deployments as an Army Ranger, Hector had a disassociated flashback with PTSD, as you saw in the video, ended up arrested on multiple felonies. Now, because we listened to Hector's story and the judge took that into account and they developed an evidence-based program to address that, Hector was able to finish his treatment, deploy again as a first sergeant, and bring everyone home safe. Now he's finishing his PhD, and some of those SWAT team officers that arrested him that night are his clients. He's a crisis negotiator on a SWAT team. That story is one that can be retold with hundreds of veterans across America that are entering our court systems today and are headed to our prisons. If we only pause and redirect them and make sure we treat what's really, really causing the problems in their life, as Hector said, that can be a national model. And the commission has built that national model now.
Yeah. Sir, I got a couple questions here for you. Really, how many more, you know, like Hector's do you think that are out there already struggling with the, you know, post-traumatic stress? And then, you know, to top the transition part where they're starting to be out by themselves and sort of struggling. Then I'm going to throw something else on there. I know there's a lot of veterans court systems out there now that are helping veterans, you know, that are struggling a little bit and getting back into society and working through all that. Are you dealing with are you dealing with those veterans courts? And could you answer that first question too?
Yes, Sergeant Major. There's really three things that I need to address in that question. And that's how many other Hectors are there? As we talked about, we don't know how many are incarcerated. But if there are 200,000 that were incarcerated in 2011, many of those would have similar stories to Hector, where they committed a violent offense. Hector's was a violent offense. Our nation has done some amazing work in veterans treatment courts, but most of those courts don't deal with someone like Hector that has committed a violent offense. 25% of those courts won't take somebody with an other than honorable discharge. And so many of our veterans are falling through the cracks, and the commission has developed something called the Model Policy Framework. One of the nation's leading legislative organizations have developed a model policy that state legislatures can adopt to address the filling of those cracks. Just a couple last things to answer the rest of your question. 86% of our counties in America do not have a veterans treatment court. So if you're a veteran that's arrested, you have to be lucky enough to be in one of the 14% of the counties that do. Otherwise, you're going to go through the same regular system where your service is not considered and any connection between your service and your offense won't be considered. You asked about transition. The commission is focused on transition at this very moment. And in about 45 days, we'll be releasing recommendations on how we can improve transition from our military to civilian life, paying more attention to the risk that some of our service members are going to have as they move into their communities, whether that risk is with suicide, homelessness, criminal justice involvement. We all want our veterans to thrive when they are released from the military. As I said, many, many do, but some struggle. And the commission is really focused on that transition.
It almost seems like people just aren't talking to each other. You know, when you got DOD and the VA and the your commission and everything else, and there's a gap in between all that stuff. How do we close that gap? And then the other thing I'll tell you is that I've always thought that we ought to put the things like this into the educational of our officers and non-commissioned officers' educational system. So we start talking about this transition policy and the issues that come up a lot earlier than maybe a couple of years, or in some cases, not at all before they ever get out of the service.
You're absolutely right, Sergeant Major. There are a lot of gaps. One analogy I use, if you imagine a warehouse that's filled with gears and shafts, and you've got the DOD running on this side and the VA running on this side and the U.S. criminal justice system running on this side. If those gears and shafts are not aligned, which they are not, you'll snap off some shafts. And so one of the ways you can address that, and the way the commission is addressing that, they're looking at the policy gaps. Where do we have gaps in policy? For instance, in the U.S. criminal justice system, we apply the resources to those who are most likely to offend.
Yeah.
If you're high risk to offend, you're going to get more treatment than somebody who is not. In the military and in the VA, over the decades, as the regulations have been developed, we have really taken the resources away from many of those who have offended or are going to offend. And so the commission is focused on those policy gaps to address that. And I think making solid evidence-based recommendations that are really getting a lot of traction on the Hill and across states in the legislatures and governor's offices.
I'm going to say one thing, and we're going to take a small break here real quick. One of the other problems is, I've always said this to a lot of people, it's hard for me, you'll understand, it's hard for somebody that serves in the military to tell somebody that hasn't served in the military exactly how I feel. So I think there's a void right there. You know, you can go to Congress and talk about this stuff, but unless you've walked in my boots, you can only speculate about how I feel, and you really don't know how I feel. And it seemed like that's an uphill battle all the time, trying to educate people that have no earthly idea. It's mind-boggling, and I'm not sure we'll ever get them to understand.
Well, Sergeant Major, it's one reason that we produced that video of Hector Medicastillo.
Yeah.
Because all of us have friends and family that have served in the military, and most of us have friends and family that have served in the military and are doing wonderful things. But many of us know folks that have struggled, and Hector really epitomizes the individual that we can understand and the story that we can understand. We're hopeful, and so far his story has really resonated with listeners.
Yeah, this is such a great discussion. One last question, I'll be quiet here for a second. Is a lot of the people that get in trouble after they get out of service, are they younger or older? I mean, we talked about before, a lot of older people do worse crimes, but there's a younger generation in there too. I mean, 18, 19, 20, 25 years old.
Sergeant Major, certainly we know that the male frontal lobe of the brain hasn't been developed until we're 25.
And there lies the problem right there, I guess.
we go into the military, we're trained to do amazing things. Some of us struggle with following every rule, abusing substances, and some of us get in trouble. We know from the research, Sergeant Major, that if you're a young enlisted person that gets in trouble and gets kicked out of the military during your first term, you're at a very, very high risk of suicide. Now that we know that, and now that America's Warrior Partnership and Duke University is finishing that research, we really need to focus our resources on those who are most at risk.
Yeah, yeah. Sir, this is a great discussion. We need to take a quick commercial break. So I know you're not going to go to it. Stay right there. We'll be right back. This is your Next Mission Video Podcast. Here's a word from our two of more of our organizations who make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Part of transitioning out is that dental and vision insurance breaks off from your medical insurance.
Vision and dental is very important to be able to enjoy your retirement.
Blue Cross Blue Shield makes a transition so much easier.
And USAA.
A promise is a trust not to be broken. Whether spoken with an oath or sealed with a pinky. And after 100 years, we're still taking care of the military community and their families. That's our mission, always.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with United States Army Colonel Jim D. Seward, Director of the Veterans Justice Commission. Remember, this is your show. Tell us about your transition. We're talking about transition now, and I know you struggle with transition, but tell us how we can help you on that transition. Tell us what topics you'd like us to cover. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org, and you'll be surprised. I'll actually reach back out to you. Sir, as we head into our final segment with you today, I'd like to talk about those veterans with less than honorable discharge and how they could end up, basically ruining a person's life. And I tell you, when I read this question, I sort of thought about myself. A young adult that makes an error in judgment that can last for the rest of their life. So what are we doing about that?
Sergeant Major, as you know, in the military, we have this procedural thing called an administrative separation. And many young service members leave the military in their first or second term with an administrative separation and an other than honorable discharge.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean they were court-martialed. That doesn't mean they committed a felony. Oftentimes, as you said, it's maybe these of minor offenses or poor judgment. We know from the Government Accountability Office on the Hill, often referred to as the GAO, that over the decades, especially these last couple wars, we have discharged tens of thousands of soldiers with an other than honorable discharge after they've already been diagnosed with PTSD and traumatic brain injury and substance use disorder. Now, why would we do that? Well, as you know, commanders have a mission, and that number one mission is mission readiness. Commanders can't keep using a soldier or a service member who's not following the rules, who's causing problems in the ranks. Rather than try to address that behavior, they're forced to get rid of that soldier immediately so they can get a replacement soldier. The commission has been studying that for well over a year and is going to be making some significant recommendations in this regard. They haven't finalized their recommendations, so I can't tell you exactly what they are. But you can imagine, Sergeant Major, if there are hundreds of thousands of Afghan vets and Iraq vets sitting at their kitchen table with their 18-year-old kid today talking about joining the U.S. military, if we as a nation can show all of our veterans and all of our citizens that we really care about these service members, that if they picked up PTSD or traumatic brain injury or substance use disorder while they were in the service, that we're going to deal with that and we're going to try to rehabilitate them, we're going to improve recruiting and retention in this nation. And I would urge your listeners to be following the Council on Criminal Justice website for those commission recommendations, which will be coming out in about 45 days or so.
Yeah. As you talked about this, I'm always thinking about stuff that I did as a young soldier. And I don't know if I told you this on the prep call, but when I came back from, this is years ago, when I came back from Vietnam, I really struggled. I mean, I had anger issues. It wouldn't take much to set me off. And I'm really, quite frankly, I'm surprised I didn't either hurt myself or somebody hurt me. But I was thinking one day that a sergeant that when I was working at Fort Knox started screaming at me out of, you know, for I'm not even sure what the problem was. And he got about 2 inches from my face, and that was all it took. And I hit him and knocked him over a table. And I was a staff sergeant at the time. And the guy got up. He was a sergeant first class, and he says, Tilly, go home. And all the time I was going home, I was thinking, I've ruined my career. I mean, I wanted to stay in the Army, but I've ruined my career. When I came back the next day, sergeant never said nothing to me until that afternoon. He walked up to me and says, Tilly, if you ever do that again, we'll have you court-martialed. Don't do it again. And left. Now, I only say that only because you have to be coaching, teaching, and you can push a person to react in such a way that is, you know, inappropriate. And you can make a person fight. And when you've asked me for so many years to really, I mean, let's be honest about one thing. You've asked me to go in the military and to kill people. And that's the bottom line. You've asked me to kill people, and you want me to turn that off. And some young adults have a tough time doing that. And it's really, you know, I was lucky to have somebody that really took care of me. But I just think about all the young adults that we could be ruining their life if they, but they probably need a little help. And we're probably not doing as much as we can to help them. That's why I said you got to connect all the dots with everybody else. So hopefully that makes sense to you.
Absolutely, Sergeant Major. And imagine if you were an E4 that did that down at the local bar on a Saturday night, and the person that you hit was a police officer because they grabbed you by the shoulder and turned you around. You've been in the sand pit training hand-to-hand combat for the last 4 years. And when somebody grabs you on the shoulder at 2 a.m., you're probably going to hit them if it seems like a threat. You know, we really need to think more seriously about how we can take care of these troops. We've got an all-volunteer force, which is recruited from every community in our country. And when they transition, they go back to those communities. We don't have transition in all of those communities. In fact, we have it in very few. That's something else the commission is looking at.
Why don't we, you know, they have different organizations in all services, like the Army. I'm talking about the Army because I'm an Army guy. The Association of United States, Association of United States Army. And they have like 124 chapters that are spread out all over the country, or 100, maybe 120 plus. But why don't we connect something, the commission connect with somebody like that to sort of do a little bit more of education, I guess, with our younger veterans or older veterans when they're out there?
That's certainly within the draft recommendations that I'm helping the commission with right now, is that connection and involvement with organizations and communities across America. We need more veteran mentors to help some of our struggling young veterans. We need people that can help with education. Our law enforcement agencies need to be trained down to every last officer in terms of how you engage with. If you're engaging with a man that just came out of a war zone and has deployed 15 times as a special forces operator, and you don't engage that correctly, it could make things much worse. And so education is a huge part of improving the system, so that we can make sure that we have a strong, amazing military that's ready to answer the call of its nation.
Yeah, you just brought up an interesting point. There's different MOSs, you know, combat arms MOSs, different MOSs. Nowadays, everybody's sort of fighting, no matter where that. But the your combat infantry guys, armor guys, you know, special operation guys are a little more stressed enough. Do you see more of those guys that get in trouble more than anybody else?
Sergeant Major, the research is really mixed on that in terms of what combat has to do with PTSD or traumatic brain injury. There are researchers that claim there's a significant connection, and there are other researchers that say deployments are what is so disruptive to people's lives to their families. And the multiple deployments are really what make a person most at risk. And so then the MOS doesn't matter. As most of us don't realize, right this very moment, almost one third of our nation's military is deployed.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the two longest wars ended, people think they're home, but right now a third of the military is deployed. So this problem isn't going away anytime soon.
No. Sir, this is a great discussion, but now that we've talked about the problem, let's talk about what the Veterans Justice Commission is doing to stem the tide of veterans entering the criminal justice system, and how can we as a country do a better job or work in a better job to take care of them?
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That's so important. The commission, as I said, is making evidence-based policy recommendations to improve the health, safety, and justice of our veterans and our communities, their families. The commission released its first set of recommendations in March of last year. Those recommendations focused on the front end of the criminal justice system. For instance, we need to be able to identify veterans when they enter the criminal justice system. Right now, it's mostly based on survey. There are databases that are run by the Veterans Administration, but law enforcement doesn't tend to use those databases. Only 9 law enforcement agencies in the country are using the VA database to try to identify a veteran when they enter the justice system. Because of one of the commission recommendations, we're currently in the middle of a project with the VA at this very moment that'll be finished in about 9 months to improve that system, to make sure that every law enforcement agency in the country starts using this to identify veterans. Because when veterans are arrested, they don't like to self-identify for a lot of different reasons. And if we can't identify them, we can't connect them with the resources in their community, with the resources at the VA, this might put them at a higher risk of suicide. So that was the first recommendation. The second recommendation really dealt with alternatives to prosecution, something that will complement those veterans' treatment courts. They worked with, as I said, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or otherwise known as ALEC, developed a model policy that state legislatures can pass, which gives every criminal jurisdiction judge in the country the jurisdiction to deal with a veteran in their courtroom, even if they don't have a veterans treatment court, to recognize their service, recognize that connection to their service, develop a treatment plan like Hector had, that national model that Hector was talking about.
Yeah.
That national model is now available on our website as the Veterans Justice Act, and it's rolling out to legislatures across the country. And the final recommendation in the first report was called for a National Center on Veterans Justice to try and be that data clearinghouse and also a clearinghouse for best practices. Right now, we have about 60,000 organizations trying to help veterans in our country. Most of them are working in silos. You might have the best program in the world in Ohio, but very few people know about it, and they can't replicate it if they don't know what's going on and they don't know the best practices. We're working with Congress on that. And as I said, the transition recommendations will be rolling out in about 45 days, where the commission intends to focus on risk, to focus on a place for higher risk veterans to go as they end their service, and to include evidence-based practices.
You know, I worked in D.C. I used to testify about twice a year in front of Congress. And so these are great recommendations, but what's it going to take to really implement these, you know, to our country? You know, how long is it going to take to implement them?
It takes leaders like Secretary Chuck Hagel and Secretary Leon Panetta and our other commissioners. They help open those doors on the Hill. I can tell you that all of the legislative leaders that we have met with are extremely concerned about the transition that our young folks face, and some of our older folks as they transition out of the military. But that transition process, that's one area that they're really focused on in Congress. I anticipate after this election year that and the commission rolls out its recommendations, I anticipate that there will be great momentum on the Hill in early 25 for many of the commission's recommendations. In the meantime, we're already seeing legislators around the country who are asking us questions about the Veterans Justice Act. I've received phone calls and had personal visits with legislators who are in fact filing the legislation in their state. They want their judges to have jurisdiction to deal with cases like Hector's. And so there's a tremendous amount of momentum. America loves its veterans. According to a recent survey by the Pew Charitable Trust, 72% of voters on the left and the right want to spend more money on veterans and taking care of veterans. And I expect they will do that as a result of the work the Veterans Justice Commission is performing.
Sir, do you ever bring anybody that's on active duty, like, you know, from again, from like TRADOC that puts all of our schools together, or maybe the current Sergeant Major of the Army or the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force or one of the senior enlisted guys from one of the services? They should probably in some way, I'm sure you give them the information, but maybe even being on the board that sort of gives them recommendation advice so they can go back and educate their service about the issues that that you're seeing when you go out there.
We're certainly working with many of those folks. There are some restrictions on the types of organizations they can serve with while they're still on active duty. I, of course, am serving in my civilian capacity, not in my military capacity, but we're certainly working with them. We have a former senior enlisted of the Coast Guard, Vince Patton. We have Alfred McMichael, former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, many military enlisted leaders that we're involved with. And we know that this information is getting back to the services. But because the commission recommendations are about filling policy gaps, first, we need to address those gaps in U.S. code or U.S. regulation. For instance, 20 years ago or so, the regulations were changed so that if I'm sitting in a jail in Tallahassee, Florida, or anywhere else in the country, I can't get any kind of treatment for my PTSD from the VA while I'm incarcerated.
Yeah.
That was a policy change that was made. Then I get released from jail 30 days from now, and they want me to go back to the VA. I'm struggling. I've lost my job. I'm still struggling with PTSD. We need to think differently about how we're applying our resources. And so that's our focus. That's our focus, is those policy gaps. But I certainly agree with you that education of our current leaders and our future leaders is very important, and the commission is focused on that as well.
Yeah. So I could probably talk to you for a couple hours. This has been a great discussion. I'm so glad you joined us today. Are there any final thoughts that you want to share? Maybe something we didn't cover, I didn't ask. I just, first of all, before you even say anything, I just want to thank you for what you and your commission are doing. It's really making a difference. I'm sure it's going to make a difference. And if we collectively, if we can ever help you in any way, we certainly would love to do that. So any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience?
Sergeant Major, I would urge all of your listeners that are interested in this to go to our website, councilonCJ.org. Look at some of the reports, look at some of the videos and the information that's there. And we all have connections with leaders in our communities and in our states. Share that information with them. Make sure that folks in your communities are thinking about the Veterans Justice Act and how you might be able to help improve the lives of veterans as they reenter your communities. If you're inclined, of course, there's a way to donate right on the website. The commission doesn't take any government money. We raise all of our own funds. We hire researchers around the country and policy experts to help us get this word out. And just so thankful, Sergeant Major. It's as a former enlisted tanker where I made sergeant, I never imagined meeting a sergeant major of the Army. And it's it's probably 30 years later, but it's such an honor to get a chance to visit with you. And it's it restores my hope every time I get to meet with amazing leaders from our military that are still concerned about their troops. And I couldn't thank you more for your continued service.
Oh, sir, I appreciate it. Could you tell that website again? And is there a phone number somebody could call to?
Yes. Let's see. So the Council on Criminal Justice, you can locate that at councilonCJ.org.
Okay, sir. Well, but again, thank you for what you're doing and what the commission is doing to help our veteran community. You've taken on a big task. It's a big issue. I hope a lot of people listen to this podcast because I think they'll be amazed the amount of people that are incarcerated. When you talk about 200,000, and that's unbelievable. And I just, again, thank you guys for what you're doing.
Thank you, Sergeant Major, and thank all of your team for helping to put this together.
God bless. Have a good one, sir.
Thank you. Take care.
Yes, sir. Thanks to Colonel Jim Seward and for being with us today. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been watching and listening to Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on to our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say I hope it's a good review, but if it's a bad one, I guess I can take that one too. While you're there, you can visit our nonprofit and corporate partners who have jobs and services available that can assist you in your transition from the military. And we just added a new job board in the partnership with Recruit Military, where you can search for a job that's just right for you. Check out this video on our website to learn how to fine-tune your search. You can also create your own individual profile. Scan the QR code on the screen or the QR code on the website to create your own profile. All information collected is confidential and won't be shared with anyone. We're here to help you. This is one way that we can do that. You can follow me on all my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you like what we're doing at Your Next Mission, click on the subscribe button. And don't forget to click on the bell, too, to receive notifications about all of our upcoming video podcasts. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatelly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Colonel Seward for joining us today. It was just great having him on the show. And as I sit here and think about this, I think about the things I did as a young adult. I went in the military when I was 17 years old and went to war at 18 years old. Came back out of war at 19. And within that two-year period of time, my life was changed. I didn't look at things the same way. I had anger issues and things that really bothered me. It took me probably 30 years to work through those issues. And so just think about all the young adults that fight and are willing to give up their lives for our country. We need to do all we can to take care of them any way that we can. Don't push a veteran away. Reach out to them. Give them a hug. Try to help them, especially if they're struggling. Thanks again for watching, and thanks again to New Mind Studios, and of course our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FPV Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FPV Vision, and USAA. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.